Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, texts 26 and 27. Are there two verses written there? Just one? That is the first one. We'll read 26. Amantriyatam munivaram. Anugyata sahanuga. Pratashtera tamaruya. Sabarya svapuram nripa. Amantriyatam munivaram. Anugyata sahanugaha. Pratashtera tamaruya. Sabarya svapuram nripa. Amantriyatam munivaram. Anugyata sahanuga. Pratashtera tamaruya. Sabarya svapuram nripa. Word for word. Amantya. Taking permission to go. Tam. From him. Munivaram. From the best of sages. Anugyata. Being permitted to leave. Saha Anuga. Along with his retinue. Prataste. Started for. Ratam Aruya. Mounting his chariot. Sabarya. Along with his wife. Svapuram. His own capital. Nripa. The emperor. Translation. Actually, the next shloka is Ubayo Rishikulyaya Sarasvatya Surodaso Rishinam Upasantanam Pasyan Ashrama Sampada. The translation. After asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave, the monarch mounted his chariot with his wife and started for his capital, followed by his retinue. Along the way, he saw the prosperity of the tranquil seer's beautiful hermitages on both the charming banks of the Sarasvati, the river, so agreeable to saintly persons. Translation, please repeat. After asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave. The monarch mounted his chariot with his wife. And started for his capital. Followed by his retinue. Along the way he saw the prosperity of the tranquil seer's beautiful hermitages. On both the charming banks of the Sarasvati. The river so agreeable to saintly persons. Purport. As cities are constructed in the modern age with great engineering and architectural craftsmanship, so in days gone by there were neighbourhoods called Rishikulas, where great saintly persons resided. In India there are still many magnificent places for spiritual understanding. There are many rishis and saintly persons living in nice cottages on the banks of the Ganges and Yamuna for purposes of spiritual cultivation. While passing through the Rishikulas, the king and his party were very much satisfied with the beauty of the cottages and hermitages. It is stated here, Pasyan Ashrama Sampada. The great sages had no skyscrapers, but the hermitage was so beautiful that the king was very much pleased at the sight. Rishikulya. So the great sage Kadama had received Svayambhuva Manu and Satarupa, his wife, along with their retinue. Of course, when the emperor, of course, Svayambhuva Manu was the emperor, so when the king travels, then he always travels with a great retinue, so many going with him. And it must have been a sight, really, Emperor Svayambhuva Manu and his wife and the whole big, huge retinue coming to the simple cottage of Kadama Muni. Most likely they waited at a distance because they couldn't all fit inside the cottage. So Kadama Muni very graciously received them all. He most graciously received them all. And now, having asked Kadama Muni to please accept his daughter Devahuti, and Kadama Muni accepted, now the king was leaving. So, very interesting, the culture, very nice culture. Also in the next verse, as mentioned, but the nice culture is Sabharya, Svapuram Nripa, Pratashti. Yes. The king, he was the emperor, still he asked his permission to leave. This is a culture, a Vedic culture, when someone, when you go to someone's house, you are very nicely received, and then when you're about to leave, then you ask for permission to leave, and then the permission is very graciously, yes, no problem, you can go, with my blessings you can go. This is a very nice culture. I don't know if it's so much the culture in the Western countries. We don't have this culture. Maybe in India still there's a little bit of this culture. But I remember, you know, and our culture growing up, we used to have one friend. We never knew where he was. And we would go to some function, and all of a sudden he would come. No one knew he would come, but all of a sudden he would come. And then when we looked, all of a sudden he was gone. No one knew when he was coming, and no one knew when he was going also. He was there, and then he was also gone at the next look. He's there, oh, now he's gone. But the so that culture is not so good. But a very reciprocal friendliness and respect. You come to someone's house, you respect that very much, and of course the host very graciously receives you, he looks after you. It is said in the Vedic culture that even if an enemy comes to the home, he is to be treated like God. Even if the enemy comes, still, because he has come to the home. You know, you may remember the story of when Krishna and who was it? They went to the Jarasandha's house. And Krishna Bhimsen and Arjuna, the three, they went to Jarasandha. Of course, Jarasandha was not very favorably disposed to Krishna, especially. Because, you know, Asti and Prapti, his daughters, were married to Kamsa. Married to Kamsa. So he had both his daughters married to Kamsa, Asti and Prapti. You know, and that was there because actually Jarasandha was very ambitious king, monarch. He had come to the Mathura area to conquer over Kamsa. He had come there with a big army. And he had come there with that big elephant, that Kuvalyapida elephant. That elephant was renowned, very strong elephant that he had the strength of, like, he could trample tens of thousands of soldiers. He was so big and strong. And he, so Jarasandha had come with the idea to conquer over. He camped on the other side of the Jamuna. And of course, Kamsa knew something was going on there. But he camped there, and his idea was to make a surprise attack on the Mathura. But at that time, Kamsa was having some big festival. And he was sitting on the throne, and so many activities were going on. So, but what had happened, that elephant had broken free and had gone over to the other side. And but then, all of a sudden, that elephant was thrown back and landed at the feet of Jarasandha, thrown by Kamsa. Kamsa was very strong, very, very strong. No one would challenge Kamsa. He just picked the elephant. He threw him around at the feet of Jarasandha. So Jarasandha was very shocked because this was his big attack weapon, this elephant. So he thought, better I don't attack this king. He had attacked so many others and conquered the kingdoms. And so he thought, better I don't attack, better to make a truce with this one, make alliance. This is the strategies of the kings. When they can't conquer, then they make an alliance. Let me make an alliance. So let me go there, and very graciously, and let me make some offering. Let me offer my daughters to Kamsa, just to pacify, and then we can negotiate, we can talk, we can make an alliance. So that's how Asti and Prapti, the two daughters of Jarasandha, became the wives of Kamsa. But later on, of course, we know Krishna and Balaram had gone to Mathura, and so many wrestlers had been defeated, and then Krishna jumped up, and then Kamsa was killed. So when Jarasandha, he'd gone back to his kingdom by then, but then he heard, so he was very upset with Krishna. And now his daughters, they were husbandless, no husband. Krishna had killed Kamsa. So Jarasandha, you know, when Krishna and Balaram were living there, Jarasandha was attacking Mathura so many times. So that one time when they went there, the idea was that Bhimsen would challenge Jarasandha. And Jarasandha knew that Krishna was not his friend, and Bhimsen. But still, when they came there, he welcomed them. He welcomed them into it. Even though he knew they are my enemies, still, he said, come on, you have come to my home, so therefore I welcome you. So this is a different, little bit different culture in those days than perhaps today. And we see here the big emperor, he comes and he asks permission from Kadava Muni. Can he please, is it all right? I take your leave now. And yes, the sage, he gave it. And this is also mentioned that the sage, Kadama Muni, he gave the permission, yes. In the next verse it's mentioned when the king came back to his kingdom and came back to his city, all the citizens came out to greet him. Such was the mood, the culture of the time. They came out to greet him. They would come out to the gates of the city and the king would come and they would greet him and cheer and accompany him back and welcome him back into the city. So such was the culture. As he was leaving, of course, it is mentioned here, the Rishikula is the nice area along the banks of the Saraswati. Saraswati is a very holy river. Here Prabhupada also mentioned Jamuna, Ganga. These are very holy rivers. Just by going there, or bathing in the holy river, taking the water on your head, you get so much blessings, and your one is purified. And so the holy rivers are very auspicious. And naturally, the sages like to take advantage of the spiritual atmosphere. And here it is mentioned they were living on either side, that the king could see on either side of the banks of the Saraswati. There were many different cottages. The cottages there were very simple, but and they were living there All the sages, the rishis were there practicing their spiritual activities. So the place itself was very beautiful. Their cottages were all very beautiful, and they themselves were practicing, going about their spiritual activity. So the whole atmosphere is very, very nice. So the king, being very cultured and being very advanced himself, could appreciate that. Of course, the sages had the cottages, not like people have their houses in the material world and the materialists have their houses. It's all for sense gratification with no thought of the spiritual life, generally speaking. The sages had. But still, they didn't think that even though they had their cottage, they didn't think that actually this is my residence. Actually, their mentality, because they're very elevated, everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm engaged in some activity, some spiritual activity in his service here. There's actually one story of Arjuna when he was traveling to the different holy places. He came across one sage. He was sitting, meditating, and he didn't have any cottage. He was just sitting, and it was a hot summer season. He was just sitting in the hot sun, and he was meditating. So, and then the hot sun was beating on his head, and Arjuna could see the sage was perspiring. So he came to him, and he paid his obeisances and touched his feet and offered respects to him and said that, "I see you are sitting here in the hot sun. You are a great rishi, a sadhu. Let me build one nice hut for you so then you can sit inside and then you don't have to get the hot sun on your head." So the sage, actually this sage was a very elevated soul, and he had a benediction. He had a benediction that he would live in the world for as many years as there were hairs on his body. He had that blessing. The hairs on his body, just imagine how many hairs are on your body. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hairs on each one of our bodies. So he had the blessing that he would live as many years as he had the hairs. And so he was sitting there but doing the meditation. So then he replied to Arjuna, he said, "Oh, don't take any trouble." He said, "I'm just here temporarily." He was living the boon for thousands of years, but still he was thinking, "I'm just temporarily. Don't take any trouble. Don't worry. Don't build any hut. I will do it. I'm all right." There's a very, very advanced personality. So different, different living entities appreciate, especially, of course, the sages. Someone who's very, very advanced, it doesn't really matter where he lives. He can be anywhere. Just like Prabhupada, one time, I've told this story many times. He came here, and one reporter asked him, "So, your divine, how you like this country?" And Prabhupada said, "Oh, I like it everywhere." What is the difference? One country, other country. To him, everywhere he was in the Krishna consciousness. Doesn't matter this country, that country. His reply was like, so someone who is very, very advanced, but still the sages, they're very advanced. And Prabhupada was traveling one country to the other for spreading the Krishna consciousness. The sages were living there. They were just engaged in their own bhajan. So naturally the sages like to go preferably to the spiritual place, to the holy place, to the place in the mode of the goodness. Place in the mode of goodness. And so we can understand that Emperor Svambhuva was also, although he was emperor, he was appreciating the mode of goodness. It is said, Satvam Rajastamariti Guna Prakti Sambhava Nibandanti Mahadehi Deinamavi. All the living entities coming to the world, they are affected by the modes of nature. They are conditioned, Nibandanti. They are conditioned by the modes. There's the sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna, mixing of the modes also. So everyone is conditioned, affected by the workings of the material energy, these gunas, these modes. Someone is affected by the sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna, Generally, it is a mix. Someone has got some sattva, someone has got sattva and a little bit of rajaguna and a little bit of tamaguna. The mix can be a little bit different. But everyone is affected. So those who are in the mode of goodness, they appreciate certain things. They like the beautiful places. Just like it is said, there's the swan and then there is the crow. The swan likes the beautiful lakes. The swan is a very beautiful bird. And it likes the nice lake. The crow, where the crow likes. In the rubbish. The crow likes the rubbish. So the crow is a different type of the bird. The sound of the crow is not very inspirational. So even the sound of the bird, the look of the bird, the place where the bird likes to go. Even I remember one time, we were in the Calcutta temple, and one of my brothers, he was on the veranda, he spit over the veranda. And the one crow was watching, and when the spit hit, he flew down and eating the spit. This is the crow. So different birds have different natures, even the birds. But the swan likes the beautiful place. You don't find the swan in the rubbish. The swan will always be. So this is the conditioning of the modes of nature. So those who are in the mode of goodness, they are very attracted to the places of the goodness. And the places of the goodness are an impetus for spiritual life. Because in the mode of goodness, it is said that those places can develop. There's a peacefulness. Peacefulness will be there. One can develop nice qualities, to be kind, to be patient, to be tolerant. This is the effect of the sattva-guna, mode of goodness, and to live in such a place. But of course, a mode of goodness means not only externally, but internally. So all these symptoms are there, and which are very conducive for advancing in the spiritual life, to be peaceful. It's not so easy to engage in the spiritual life when one is too much affected by mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Mode of passion means a very impatient, just always fast, always working hard. Fast, very attached to so many things, very easily angered, become frustrated. So many symptoms are there. We can read in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat, so many shastras give us the symptoms of sattva guna and the raja guna. So these types of qualities are not so conducive, because to practice the spiritual life, one needs to be more peaceful. One needs to concentrate and develop the knowledge. But in the mode of passion, so it is said generally, the countryside is more the mode of goodness. The cities are the mode of passion. And in the cities, of course, the gambling places, the place of the intoxication, the meat eating, illicit sex, these are the mode of ignorance places. So each person is conditioned. They have a certain nature. So you can see by the symptoms what is the nature, what conditioning they have. Just like a doctor will be able to see. You will go, I am sick. He will check, what are your symptoms? By the symptoms, and he can understand, oh yes, you have this disease. You are situated like that. So similarly, one can see someone who's trained, someone who's advanced, can see by the nature of a person, by the symptoms, how they act. What is their mentality? What is their attitude? Oh, this one is more in the rajaguna. This one is in the tamaguna. Tamaguna. Generally, tamaguna, very lazy. Doesn't like to do any working. Just like sleeping. If procrastinating, if something needs to be done, he doesn't want to do, he wants the other one to do it. Always giving excuses. Always blaming the other one. Never his fault, the other one's fault. I never did wrong, he did the wrong. So There are many symptoms of the tamaguna. Now, these tamaguna symptoms are not very conducive for the spiritual life. But the tamaguna persons, they will be very attracted to the tamaguna places. They won't be attracted, just like we said, the crow and the swan. The tamaguna persons, they won't be very attracted to the sattvaguna places. They like to go to the tamaguna places. Just like I remember some years ago, we were chanting in the suburbs here, and I forget where exactly, but we went past a market, and one section was the meat market, was the meat section. And so all sorts of people were there, you know, all the things were hanging from the, you know, the sausages and the intestines of the pigs were hanging, and so many people were there, very smiling, looking, smelling. Of course, the devotees, we were going past, oh, horrible, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We weren't attracted. We were repulsed by that thing. Prabhupada one time, he said this, mode of goodness. Prabhupada wanted to establish all the devotees at least in the mode of goodness, and then from the mode of goodness, we can practice the spiritual life very nicely. So then be more regulated. See, the mode of goodness means very regulated person, very dutiful person. Does things just appropriately. But mode of passion is just all over the place. And in the mode of ignorance, no regulator, whatever. Doesn't care for anything. Just whatever comes along, he just does. Prabhupada said, yes, follow all these regulations, keep yourself very clean. Everything should be very clean. Just like here, as mentioned, very beautiful hermitages, everything was nice and clean. Prabhupada always commented, the temples, ashram should be very nice and clean. Not only in the temple room, but outside, in the courtyard, in the ashram itself. He said, if one in the ashram, in the ashram is a dirty place, and he doesn't take any notice, he doesn't react to the dirty place, that means he is in. That is mode of ignorance. And he doesn't react to the mode of ignorance, that means he is in the mode of ignorance. If someone doesn't react, that means they are in that. You understand? Just like the devotees were chanting, well, the meat was hanging, people were smelling the sausages, all the intestines. We were repulsed, but people, they like that thing. They go there. Specifically, they go there. You see. So these sort of things are not very conducive. As I said, someone very advanced, oh, it doesn't matter where he is. But that is a very rare person. Very, very rare person. And of course, these cities, mainly passion, mode of passion. They were working so hard early in the morning. We see how the people get up. Even I go for the japa walk in the morning after the Mangalarti, 5 o'clock. You see, some of them, they're already going to the work. 5 o'clock, the tradesmen usually, they start. They're going to the work. Prabhupada commented one time. We went, on the japa walk, and he saw the traffic already. It was 6 o'clock. Zoom, zoom, zoom. And so they are going breakneck speed to the work. I always noted that phrase, breakneck. you're going to break your neck going so fast. But everyone has to go so fast. This is a mode of passion. Fast. Nothing is fast enough. Everything has to be fast. This is one of the symptoms of passion. Everything you do, even you eat, fast eating. You see, they're walking, talking, eating, very attached to so many things. Eating, talking on phone, eating simultaneously, and walking. So I read there's so much increase in pedestrian fatalities. Because the people, they're walking in the city and they're talking on the phone, they just walk on the road and poof, the bus comes. Finish. Doesn't give any attention. They're very addicted to these things. They're addicted to the mode of passion. They've got to look in a screen. I call them the screen addicts. Anywhere there's screen, they've got to look there. Some sort of screen, they've got to look inside there. Must be. So it's a mode of passion. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Mode of ignorance, always down. Always depressed, morose. Mode of ignorance means always depressed, morose. Always fault-finding, criticising. Never happy. It's mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance person, never happy. Whatever anyone says, doesn't like. Mode of ignorance. Mode of passion, they like, depending on their condition, or they don't like, depending also. But mode of goodness, they're very calm, they're very steady, they're very dutiful, as I said. And they like to, as I said, go to these nice places. So this was what Swayambhuva Manu was appreciating, the nice cottages. So as I said, Prabhupada wanted that. Now, of course, he wanted to spread the Krishna consciousness. Same with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We have to go to the places where the people are. So many people are living in the cities. I think this country is one of the most urbanized countries in the world. A small population that 3/4 live in the city. If you go in the inner of the Australia, all desert inside there. Practically no one lives in there. Some is sandy desert, some is rock desert, some is little bush desert. But hardly anyone lives there. Just some animal live there. So the people, if we go there, yes, we can just chant Hare Krishna. And maybe some lizard will go. And some bird will fly, and they'll be benefited. That's nice. But what about so many other people? So therefore, Prabhupada wanted where a lot of the people we have to try to help and give the Krishna consciousness in some way or other. So therefore, this center. There's so many temples all over the world, but he wanted them very nice, peaceful places, just like here in Melbourne. Very nice courtyard with nice fountain and flowers and everything clean, and when people come here, they should feel very peaceful. Just coming into the place, just coming here, they will feel automatically peaceful. Or are you going out there like a hectic? Soon as you go on the road, isn't it? You go in the traffic. I remember one godbrother knew we were in New York staying at his house. We had some festival, and we were staying with him, so he had to go and get something. He said, and then he came back. He said, "Oh, that was exhausting." He said, "Out there, as soon as you go on the road, it's like a zoo." Immediately, woo, woo, woo. Stop, start. So many traffic jam. People get the road rage. They curse. And then, you know, so there's no peacefulness. Even they come home. And then the house is the same. So much mode of passion, peacefulness. One of my godbrothers, he does a program just to, the meditation program, just to get them to come and listen to them. And then in the end, they have some chanting. But then they pay. And in the beginning, they lie down on the mat. And they pay $25 to come. And they lie down on the mat. He puts some music. And in the end, they do some chanting. I said, why don't they just go home and lie on the mat? Why do they come here and pay $25? He said, yeah, they can't, because they can't, at home, even at home, they can't relax. The family, the children, this, that. People can't relax. They can't even sleep at night. They're tossing, turning, money, this, that. So then they have to come and lie on the mat in a foreign place. In the foreign place. You see, this is mode of passion in the city. So it's very hard to get the relief for a modern person today, isn't it? Very hard to relax. People don't know how to relax anymore. They can't. The mode of passion is working them up. Of course, unless someone is in the mode of ignorance, then they're just like. So therefore, the temples, as I said, nice, relaxing. And then we also give them nice prasad, nice Krishna consciousness. We saw when people came to see Srila Prabhupada, he would invite them, make them very comfortable, ask, how are you? Is everything all right? I was very intrigued, actually, how Srila Prabhupada, I learned a lot from Prabhupada in how to deal with people. He would make everyone feel very welcome and very relaxed. And he would just ask, how are you? And ask about their family. And then after some time, then he would start to introduce the Krishna consciousness. I remember a priest came to see him, and he was about the same age as Prabhupada. He said, "Oh, how old are you?" "Oh, yes." They talked about their age. And Prabhupada said something very funny. He said, "Do you still have all your teeth?" And then he said, "Oh, yes, I have most of my teeth," he said. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I have all mine." He said, "He's like this." Then he broke the ice, you see, he broke the ice. Then that man was able to speak to him about the Krishna consciousness. And they had a very nice discussion about, you know, the spiritual life and general religious principles and so many nice things. They had a nice discussion. And in the end, he could take some prasad, take some fruits, like that. So nice atmosphere. And Prabhupada says here, yes, even though, you know, the cottages were very simple, but still they were very beautiful. They weren't like simple and run down and dirty. Not like that. You know, sometimes the poor people, like, haven't got any money. They live in just the slum. So the rishis don't live like slum. Like in India and many cities of the world, you see some areas, they're slum area. They're very dirty, very run down. No one likes to go there. But this is, even the emperor was attracted to this area. A big difference. Even the emperors, who was accustomed to such opulence, still this is very beautiful. So there's different standards of opulence, different standards of prosperity. Opulence, people today, they think that the standard is, more big house, more car, more possessions of so many things. But this is not really, necessarily opulent. You know, people live in a nice apartment, but, you know, they're living in so cramped up. You see, so many in the big cities now, the trend is just apartment living, like the pigeons. Sometimes we say the pigeonhole. We pigeonhole. Just like you see the pigeon, they all live together in the one little area. But you see so many apartments going up and so many people live inside there, cramped up. So this is advancement. We have our technology. We have our screen. But this is not necessarily the symptom of advancement of life. What is the quality of your life, actually? You know, you can't relax, you can't spend time with the family. I read one story, one man, the family was a little dysfunctional, that, you know, they had, the father was working certain hours, mother was working certain hours, children had the school, and they hardly saw each other. The children were teenagers. So the father wanted to communicate to his son, so he sent him an email. He sent him an email. "Can we please? Can you please come to dinner so we can talk?" So this is the standard. So this is not necessarily the standard of what is prosperity, what is opulent, what is nice life. And so at that time, of course, the rishi kulas, the place of the rishis. And if one has opportunity, and Prabhupada especially mentions India, this is the beauty of India. These things are the beauty of India. The holy rivers, the holy places, the rishis, these things are the beauty. Big cities, the Westerners are not going to go to India to see the cities. They already have the cities, and more nice even. India doesn't have to impress the world by big cities. But these things, the culture of India, that is what everyone is attracted to. What is the culture? They like to go there, see the temples, see the holy places. They're very intrigued by that. That they don't have so much. So India should be concentrating more on that, not on just building up. So we see now in India the boom for building up, following the West now, the big high rises, one after the other. Make money, everything's money. Prabhupada said, actually, he was critical of this. He said, after independence, before India was very much a rural and very spiritually minded. But then after independence, the leaders were thinking that the people of India, they're too religious. Now we've got the independence, we have to do more working and making money and build up the economy and build up the prosperity. So they purposely, in some cases at least, they would encourage the industrials to put their factory in the holy places. You find in India, when you go many holy places, some factories are there. And this is encouraged by the leaders. We want to break the religiosity of the people. They're too religious. Now they have to work hard and build the economy. But what is the purpose of the life? The spiritual life is very high quality life. It makes people happy, makes people calm and peaceful. If people don't have the spirituality, then they have to resort to all sorts of other things. And in fact, actually, Devon Minimaj was telling me, he talked to the former Prime Minister of New Zealand. He said they have discussions like this in the government. He said the people, if we don't give the people some engagement outside work, then they're going to be destructive. So therefore, they come up with all sorts of ideas, sports stadiums, this idea, that idea. But these things in themselves are not sufficient. They're just temporary, very shallow solutions to the happiness of people in general. What is needed is more spirituality, more places like the Rishi Kulas, nicer places where people can come, relax, and engage in some spiritual practice. And then they feel very satisfied and feel very happy. So everything was so agreeable to Swayambhuva Manu and his wife, and these places were also agreeable to the great saintly persons who were living there. All right, I'll read this first again if anyone has any question or comment. After asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave, the monarch mounted his chariot with his wife and started for his capital, followed by his retinue. Along the way, he saw the prosperity of the tranquil sea as beautiful hermitages on both the charming banks of the Sarasvati, the river so agreeable to saintly persons. Any questions and comments? Prabhu. Well, I mean, it's not that everyone will be by nature. Everyone has their nature, and the main thing is that to cultivate the Krishna consciousness. That can be done anywhere. Unfortunately, there's too much importance given to big huge cities, and the cities are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. When you read reports that the cities are getting so big, they say they'll become like mega cities, with so many people living inside just one area. Already some of the big cities of the world, 25, 30 million people, so many problems. Everyone living on top of each other, practically. Big cities, big traffic jam. Traffic jams are getting worse, isn't it? Pollution, India. Now I read an article where of the 10 most polluted cities of the world, India has 5. And what is the number one most polluted city of the world? Delhi. New Delhi is considered. This is research. They came and measured the pollution with all the instruments and everything like that. And Delhi is the number one, and then Mumbai, and then Calcutta, and then Chennai, and all the other. But 5 of the top 10 was them. Then you had Mexico City and some other places. So, when you fly, you can see you're going in the brown. And so much trouble. The cities of the past weren't so big like that. Now they're becoming more big, 30 million, 40 million. Tokyo, big, huge cities. And just becoming more and more. And more people are coming there because they want to do the working. More slums are coming. Very problematic. And so we do encourage more simple living, if one can live a more rural lifestyle. But of course, to do the farming, one has to have a nature for that. That's another thing. But in the Krishna consciousness, we can take up these activities. But as far as possible, try to live more simple life for yourself. Even if you're living in the big city, doesn't mean you have to get crazy like everybody else and make your life very complicated. Just try to keep it simple, and then there's going to be time for your Krishna consciousness. So the project, the farming project, we're encouraging. We encourage devotees to go there, live more simple life, but they have to be prepared to live more simple life. Then again, one has to have certain nature to be able to live like that. But as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we can do anything. But whatever our service, whatever service is required, the devotee is willing to do that service. Main thing, try to live simply and practice your Krishna consciousness very nicely. Any other question? Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Balabha Bhagwan ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Gaur.